How are you doing with the changes you're making in your life? Today is part two of our discussion about change on this episode of Recovery Support with Kevin Bergen. This is Recovery Support, and I'm Kevin Bergen, licensed psychotherapist. This show is to support those in recovery from sexually compulsive behavior and to offer that support with education, inspiration, and motivation. Last week, we began a preview of Dr. Patrick Carn's book, In the Shadows of the Net, Breaking Free of Compulsive Online Sexual Behavior. Dr. Carnes and his co-authors write about first-order change and second-order change. In our last episode, we talked about different attitudes in the two types of change. We talked about compartmentalization, being either black or white in how we live our lives, and we talked briefly about relapse. Today, we'll talk about second-order change. First, we're going to read from the S.A. White book, page 203, The Problem. Many of us felt inadequate, unworthy, alone, and afraid. Our insides never matched what we saw on the outsides of others. Early on, we came to feel disconnected from parents, from peers, from ourselves. We tuned out with fantasy and masturbation. We plugged in by drinking in the pictures, the images, and pursuing the objects of our fantasies. We lusted and wanted to be lusted after. We became true addicts. Sex with self, promiscuity, adultery, dependency relationships, and more fantasy. We got it through the eyes. We bought it. We sold it. We traded it. We gave it away. We were addicted to the intrigue, the tease, the forbidden. The only way we knew to be free of it was to do it. Please connect with me and make me whole, we cried with outstretched arms. Lusting after the big fix, we gave away our power to others. This produced guilt, self-hatred, remorse, emptiness, and pain, and we were driven ever inward, away from reality, away from love, lost inside ourselves. Our habit made true intimacy impossible. We could never know real union with another because we were addicted to the unreal. We went for the chemistry, the connection that had the magic, because it bypassed intimacy and true union. Fantasy corrupted the real. Lust killed love. First addicts, then love cripples, we took from others to fill up what was lacking in ourselves. Conning ourselves time and again that the next one would save us, we were really losing our lives. Today we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We're going to talk about what it is that constitutes second-order change. Dr. Carnes and his co-authors give us some ideas of what second-order change can look like. Starting on page 150 of the book In the Shadows of the Net, Breaking Free of Compulsive Online Sexual Behavior. Second-order changes are the actions that will help you find the path to the deepest parts of yourself. They are the steps that will enable you to develop a new life in recovery. As you've seen, this is a difficult journey, one that often requires a number of interventions, including therapy, support groups, and spiritual guidance. It also takes time. It may help you to have more patience if you remember that it took you some time to get into the situation you're in, and it will likewise take some time and work for a change to take place. To achieve sound and tested guidance for sustainable recovery, consider the following tools. Finding and working with a good therapist. There is a difference between going to therapy and actually being in therapy. Going to therapy means minimal involvement. It's basically showing up, sitting down, and waiting for the therapist to take charge. You don't voluntarily open up, share problems, or take any initiative. Being in therapy, however, means that you come to each session with concerns and issues to work on. You have a commitment to being there mentally and emotionally, not just physically. You're there to take charge and to take responsibility for what happens. Therapy is not something your therapist does to you. Rather than resisting therapy, acknowledge your need for help. open yourself up to the struggle and pain involved in recovery, rather than trying to do everything you can to avoid it. Once your therapist has helped you contain your behaviors, he or she can help you begin to look at the deeper issues that lie behind your compulsive and addictive behaviors, like family of origin experiences, past trauma, and your relationship with your partner. Since working in therapy is a second-order process, this task will take time. Finding and using a sponsor. Again, there's a difference between getting a sponsor and using a sponsor. Getting a sponsor is merely the act of finding someone who will agree to sponsor you. Your connections are brief and somewhat perfunctory. You don't really ask for help, and you don't take advantage of all that a sponsor can do for you. Finding and using a sponsor means connecting with a person who is willing to know everything about you, the whole dark side, the below-the-surface part of the volcano. A sponsor should be a person with whom you can discuss anything you want, someone who will support you without necessarily colluding with you, and someone who will be honest with you and who can confront you on any issue. Your sponsor may be someone who has already walked this road before, or you may want to choose a close friend or colleague. We strongly urge you not to choose your partner as a sponsor, since partners are not only too close to the problem, but often have also become part of the problem. Once you have a sponsor, allow this person to help you. Having and using a sponsor is fundamentally about letting yourself be known. You must be willing to surrender to feedback regarding what it will take to get your life under control. And that means you have to let this person know how bad things really are right now, so he or she can see how best to help you. Finding and using a support group. As with therapy and sponsorship, there's a difference between going to group and using a group. If you're forcing the group members to work to get through to you, if you're trying to keep as much of your life as hidden as possible, then you're just going to group. Using your group requires that you let down the barriers and allow others to know who you really are. This includes sharing when you're in trouble, taking chances, trusting the group, and asking for help. Participating in 12-step meetings. Many people have found tremendous support from recovery from a variety of compulsive and addictive behaviors. Problems with alcohol, other drugs, bulimia, gambling, sex, and more through attending 12-step meetings. As with support groups, you can go to meetings and just sit in a corner and people will pretty much leave you alone. Or you can go to meetings, listen, introduce yourself, socialize with people afterward, tell your story, your whole story, and talk and contribute at each meeting you attend. It may take some trial and error to find a meeting that feels right for you, but when you do, make a commitment to it. Remember, you're trying to build a support network, and meetings are a great way to begin this process. These people will understand you because they have been where you are now. And they know how to help and support you because they were helped and supported by those who came before them. Working a program. The phrase working the program grew out of the 12-step tradition. It means to actively participate in a 12-step program. While 12-step programs can be very effective, we're using the term program more broadly here. By working the program, we mean that you need to make a firm commitment to participate in whatever recovery program or process you choose. That program may differ from a 12-step program in that it has different assignments and goals or is behaviorally oriented. Each therapy and recovery program looks a little different, but that's really not important. You could go to any number of different programs and still find help through each, as long as you're committed to the process of working that program. Conversely, you could go to the best program in the world and not be helped at all if you aren't committed. It's not so much the content of the program you attend that's critical, as it is your willingness to open up and be known. Commitment to the process is the key to success. You truly need to work the program. watching out for the bounce effect. Be aware of what we call the bounce effect. This happens when people begin working a program and attending support groups. They initially make big disclosures as they tell their stories, and having done that, they feel better, and then they stop. They don't take further steps. They rarely call their sponsor. They merely attend meetings. They don't participate in them. They failed to understand that change, growth, and healing are ongoing processes, and that they need to share continually what is happening in their recovery and lives. Opening up to others is not a one-time event or simply an end in itself. It is the first step in sharing who you are and who you are becoming. This kind of openness needs to become a way of life if you are to succeed in recovery. Our research with thousands of recovering people who have participated in 12-step programs has shown that those who committed to and followed the program through the ninth step rarely relapse. The goal of treatment and recovery is not to immediately jump all the way to the other extreme, to make an enormous and dramatic splash at a meeting and to your sponsor, and then be done with everything else. Instead, seek the middle ground. Begin the process and then continue it. Participate in your therapy groups, work the steps of your program, and begin to do service to others. You won't at this point know where this will all end, but have faith in the process and continue. Recovery is not an event. It's an ongoing process, a process that will, over time, become far less focused on recovery from problematic sexual behaviors and more focused on personal and spiritual growth. Making social connections. Reestablishing social connections is one of the most important steps you can take in recovery, particularly if you have problems with sexual behavior on the internet. If you've been involved with cybersex, your social relationships have atrophied to the point where you have only one, and that's between you and your computer. Although there are some useful ways to develop and refine recovery with the internet and to find support on the internet, if that's as far as you take recovery, it means that your primary relationship is still between you and a computer. It is simply imperative that you begin to develop face-to-face contacts with other human beings, and the only way to do so is through actual social activities. Enroll in a photography or a foreign language class. Join a church group or a bike club. Volunteer at a community organization. Or take advantage of one or more of the countless other opportunities to meet people. One of the keys to breaking your link with the internet is simply being with people in person. You need to have real, as opposed to virtual, interactions and relationships. You need to be out in the world interacting with people rather than sitting at home, isolated and alone with your computer. Through these social experiences, you'll meet people with whom you can become a companion and friend, and you'll find the opportunity for deeper relationships in your life. Developing good social support can, in fact, be just as important and effective for your recovery as finding a good therapist. Involving family and friends. It's important to seek support from as many places as possible. Some people are comfortable talking with others in their lives, such as appropriate colleagues, good friends, and family members, while others find it enormously difficult to tell even one person. Those in the former group, however, have the best chance of achieving successful recovery. A word of caution here. When you begin to talk about your life, you may find that there are some people who don't really need to know what you've been through, and for whom hearing your story would be painful and difficult. Hence, you need to respect the needs of others and to think about the consequences of revealing your story before doing so. It may not be appropriate, for example, to tell all your coworkers or your boss, if for no other reason than that you may be fired. It may also not be appropriate to tell your parents or other extended family members. This is really an example of working to develop good boundaries. So start slowly. Find one or two people you can truly trust. Get a sponsor, contact a good therapist, and then with the help of this support group, slowly decide whom else you should include. Over time, you'll find that the more people you can include in your support group, the stronger your recovery will be. We can't overemphasize the importance of involving your partner early in the recovery process, because his or her involvement will dramatically increase your chances of success. It's also important that your partner have a therapist too, and that you, your partner, and both your therapists be involved in this process, especially for help in determining how much detail to reveal to others. You should reveal only information that will not be abusive to your partner. Disclosing every detail of everything you've ever done may simply be hurtful and unnecessary. Spiritual development. Spiritual growth and development is an individual matter. How you pursue the spiritual aspects of your life can involve a variety of means, including meditation, membership in a religious organization, exploring Eastern spirituality, or practicing yoga, just to name a few. Involving someone else as a spiritual coach or mentor can be useful, as can joining a spiritual community with which you can readily identify. Your spiritual growth can become a tremendous source of support for your recovery. To optimize your recovery, we strongly suggest that you embrace both the first order changes laid out in the previous chapter and the second order changes we addressed in this chapter. First order changes are meant to be stopgap measures. If you stop with them, you'll experience some healing, but the likelihood of falling back into your old behaviors will remain high. Keep in mind that first order changes are only surface measures. They will not enable you to address the causes of the problem, which are deeper and take more time to work through. They will, however, help you quickly get your life under control and set the stage for the deep work to be done with the second order changes. As you can see, second order changes help you build a strong support group. It's also likely that you'll be surprised to discover that this isn't a journey you have to take by yourself. In fact, it's a journey that you really can't take alone. This concludes our reading today from Patrick Carn's book, In the Shadows of the Net, Breaking Free of Compulsive Online Sexual Behavior. I hope you've gleaned some ideas about the different kinds of change. This idea of stopgap measures or first order change, that's the first thing that we do just to get some control in our life. And then once we have some sobriety or we have some control, then we move on to the second order changes. These are things that take a while. They go deeper. These provide lasting change. In closing today, I'm going to read from the White Book on page 204, The Solution. We saw that our problem was threefold: physical, emotional, and spiritual. Healing had to come about in all three. The crucial change in attitude began when we admitted we were powerless, that our habit had us whipped. We came to meetings and withdrew from our habit. For some, this meant no sex with themselves or others, including not getting into relationships. For others, it also meant drying out and not having sex with the spouse for a time to recover from lust. We discovered that we could stop, that not feeding the hunger didn't kill us, that sex was indeed optional. There was hope for freedom, and we began to feel alive. Encouraged to continue, we turned more and more away from our isolating obsession with sex and self, and turned to God and others. All this was scary. We couldn't see the path ahead, except that others had gone that way before. Each new step of surrender felt it would be off the edge into oblivion, but we took it. And instead of killing us, surrender was killing the obsession. We had stepped into the light, into a whole new way of life. The fellowship gave us monitoring and support to keep us from being overwhelmed, a safe haven where we could finally face ourselves. Instead of covering our feelings with compulsive sex, we began exposing the roots of our spiritual emptiness and hunger, and the healing began. As we faced our defects, we became willing to change. Surrendering them broke the power they had over us. We began to be more comfortable with ourselves and others for the first time without our drug. Forgiving all who had injured us, and without injuring others, we tried to right our own wrongs. At each amends, more of the dreadful load of guilt dropped from our shoulders until we could lift our heads, look the world in the eye, and stand free. We began practicing a positive sobriety, taking the actions of love to improve our relations with others. We were learning how to give, and the measure we gave was the measure we got back. We were finding that none of the substitutes had ever supplied. We were making the real connection. We were home. In closing, I'm going to offer the third step prayer. This can be found by Googling third step prayer, looking on page 63 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, or on page 95 of the SA White Book. If you know the prayer, please join me. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. You can refer to the show notes at recoverysupport.podbean.com. You can also email me with any kind of commentary, questions, or feedback at kbrecoverysupport@gmail.com. This podcast does not promote any program or fellowship, and I only provide it to inform you of resources that I have found helpful to my clients. Have a fantastic week, and have a sober day.